What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Moto 247 show. I'm Ezra Henry, alongside the Loretta Lynn champ himself, the man, Dean Taylor. And we're back, breaking down the last two rounds on the East Coast. We had a week break after not doing one, our episode last week. And since then, the series went east for a freezing cold Minneapolis. Glad I wasn't there. It looked freezing cold. Some good racing there. And then it went down to Arlington for round two of the 250 East class. And, man, it delivered. Like we've been saying on this podcast all year, the racing has been really good. And with this, the series headed east, the 450 class is still really good. Some really good battles in the points with Anderson and Tomac, and Webb's still off a little bit, but he got a win in the Triple Crown there in the first race there in Arlington. And a lot of good racing in the 450 class. And then with the 250 class, some drama there with Jet Lawrence and Austin Faulkner after Jet got clipped that tough lock and got out of control and sent it on the finish line and went right in the Faulkner there. But there's been a lot of good racing in that class as well. So really pumped on this season and also really pumped on these episodes, because if they continue to deliver some really entertaining and tight races, it's going to make these podcasts a lot more fun. So I can't thank you guys enough for tuning in to this podcast here, and I'm hoping to pump out some more than we've had in the past. It seems like I've mentioned this before, that it's like we do a few and then we have a long break. So really excited that we're getting a lot in. We had last week off, but we've been on top of it for the most part. So yeah, thank you guys for listening, and I hope you enjoy. And I also want to give a big shout out to our newest sponsor here on the show, which is Blood Lubricants. As you guys know, it's really important to have really good oil in your bike. Be like Joey Crown, Alex Ray, Kyle Chisholm, Logan Carnow, and the whole SGB Honda team, and many more by using Blood Lubricants. Go over to their website and use code MOTO247 for 25% off on most products they have on there. Again, that's MOTO247 in all caps. MOTO247 for 25% off on most products on their website. Go over there. Their link to their website is in their Instagram bio. So go over there and find them on Instagram as well at Blood Lubricants. And I'm also really excited to have a brand new grip company on board with us. I want to give a big shout out to Whiskey Throttle Grips. They make grips and apparel, half waffle, and soft compound grips. Go over and check out their Instagram at whiskey_throttle_grips. Go on there, see what they have going on and all their cool grips. And right in their bio is their link to their website. So go check them out on Instagram, hit that follow button, and click that link in the bio. If you guys are looking to get graphics for your bike, your snowmobile, or even get a helmet wrap, I highly recommend you guys check out Prism Designs. Aaron at Prism does an amazing job. The graphics look so sick, and not only do they look really cool, the quality of those graphics are top-notch, too, and I have a set on my pit bike, and man, they look cool, have that Geico theme going on, and, well, rest in peace, Geico Honda. Anyways, have that going, and it looks sick, but not only that, but the quality of them is really great, and that's something I was really pumped on, actually, because there's a lot of companies out there that the graphics look really cool, really clean. You know, you can post your picture on Instagram, and the bike looks so sick, but you have a weekend on the bike of doing a couple motos and they're starting to peel and everything, and that's just really frustrating. And that's the complete opposite with Prism. The quality of them is really great, and they're at an affordable price too. So I highly recommend you guys check out Prism Designs. You can find them on Instagram at PrismDesigns_company. And then their link to their website is right there in their bio. So definitely recommend you check out Prism.
And we're back, episode 37 of the Moto 247 show. The Supercross series headed to the East Coast, 2 weeks ago, Minneapolis and Arlington. And like we said before, you know, the racing was really crazy, and it still continued to be really entertaining as we're heading into round three of the East Coast in Daytona.
Yeah, I said, I feel like in the last 2 weeks, there's a lot to talk about just within the Supercross series and stuff like motocross Supercross related too, just happening in the news too. So I don't know if you want to start with kind of talking about Minneapolis.
Yeah, with the East Coast, like we're talking about how stacked it is and how good racing it was going to be, and so far with the first two rounds, it's been really good. a lot of drama, obviously, as you guys know, in Arlington. But with Minneapolis, yeah, I think it caught some people off guard. But I pulled up the results from that. Pulled up Arlington's, but.
Yeah, I thought there was, like, some of the people that, like, we were kind of anticipating to be up front were up there. And other people, kind of like almost Jeremy Martin, I feel like I was expecting a little more out of him. Just, I don't know. The guy's just two-time outdoor 250 champion, and people on the Star Racing Yamaha seem to be so successful. We've seen how good Christian Craig is on the bike. I feel like I just expected a little more out of him.
Yeah, I thought he'd be a little bit better, too. Like, and obviously, Supercross isn't his specialty. But still, like you just said, with all the things he's done and accomplished in his past, I thought he'd come out swinging and being a little bit better. But still, he's not too far back right now. But, yeah, he just had some bad luck in Arlington as well. But, yeah, hopefully going into round three, he'll be a little bit better. But, yeah, with Levi out now, that the Star team lost another rider. So,
yeah, it just seems like that bike is so good. And yeah, I just thought Jeremy would be better, but then they said Hunter Lawrence at Minneapolis. Like, feel like meeting everyone's expectations, and it's kind of funny watching the qualifying pre-race show leading into Arlington. Everybody was like already bringing up and talking about as if he was going to go the whole season undefeated. Yeah, and I'm sitting there. I was like, God, like I don't know if I'm that sold on how good he is. Like, I'm like, in my eyes, he's still just a young kid that's going to make mistakes, which, I mean, if anybody watched Minneapolis or watched Arlington, I feel like that could not be more true. He's a young kid who's just going to keep making mistakes.
Yeah. And to say that with how stacked this field is, I finally got the results pulled up from Minneapolis. That's what I was doing right there. But yeah, after like the first round, there's 9 rounds total. And to come out saying that, I think it caught everyone off guard. Or not off guard, but kind of pissed everyone off. Because we're like, whoa, hold on. The dude's good. He's really good. But yeah, I don't think we should start talking about that. And maybe if he wins 3 or 4 in a row, you know, like you can start talking about it. But there's guys like, there was Faulkner in there. Obviously just got hurt. McAdoo, Martin, Hampshire. Hampshire had some issues since in the first 2 rounds since the East Coast kicked off. But, yeah, there's a lot of guys in there that can win. Kitchen was looking really good before he got hurt. And
Kind of Pierce Brown hasn't been setting the world on fire. He's just kind of almost riding around out there.
Yeah, I thought he'd come out a little bit better. Like, he looked really good last year. And I thought he
was he's out there. He's training with Mosman and Barsha, too. And those guys have been, I think, having really strong rides.
Yeah, like, I wasn't really expecting him to come out winning. Like, I think he's definitely capable of getting a main event win. And even, like, just getting a win in the Triple Crown or something. And maybe not, like, a main event win, but a race win. Whatever you want to call those, the motos or races in the Triple Crown. But, yeah, I thought he'd be definitely up there a little bit further than he has been. But, yeah, he definitely surprised me. Another rider that surprised me that it's not up front, but still, he's kicking ass. Kicking ass is Phil Nicoletti there. He got 10th in Minneapolis, and he got 9th in Arlington, and he got 9th with, I think, a 7.5.15 for 9th overall after crashing in that third one. And I think he was inside the top 5 in that third one. He was right in front of – was it four? No, he was right in front of Robertson when he went down there right before the over-under jump. But he's looking really good on that Club MX Yamaha.
Yeah, he is. He's impressing me. I'm like really stoked on that. He seems like a really good dude. That's kind of got his like a really funny sense of humor and sarcasm, but he's a really good dude.
Yeah, I'm really pumped for him, and I think a lot of people were not thinking that he would be able to run up front with those kids, and he's kind of proved them all wrong. I think he's like what, 31, 32 right now, and I've heard he has been off the Supercross scene for 4 years. I can't believe it's already been that long that he's been up in Canada. But coming back down to the States and hopping back on the 250, and yeah, he's looking really good. He surprised me for sure. Like, I've seen him ride in the outdoors, and he always put in really solid results on the JGR team back when they're on Yamahas. But, yeah, he's looking really good right now. And if it wasn't for that crash in the moto number 3, or race number 3, whatever you want to call it, I think he would have got around the top five there, so it would have been almost three top five finishes with a 7-5 and whatever you want to place him at, like 5-6 or seventh there at least. But yeah, he's looking really good. Jordan Smith, I thought he would honestly be a little bit better. Like I was definitely expecting him to crash a lot because yeah, in his past that's just what he's done. But I know he's not on the factory team now. He's on that Firepower Honda. But still, I thought he'd be a little bit better. But he's kind of quiet in Arlington, though.
I feel like he might be kind of like on a slow trend upward, maybe as the season goes on. Like him and Mitchell Oldenburg, like I think they're, in my eyes, they're ranked about the same at this point, just for how much time off the bike Jordan Smith's had. I could both see them slowly trending like upward and maybe, like you said, maybe getting inside the top five, like if they get a good start.
Yeah, sorry about that, guys. Having some connection issues there, but we're talking about Jordan Smith and just you were saying how it's going to be a little bit of a slow start to it, to his season here, and yeah, I can really see that being a possibility. A new team, new bike, and everything, and like what Faulkner said too is, he's been crashing a lot in his pro career, so he's kind of being a little bit more laid back and not so aggressive on the bike, and maybe Jordan Smith is doing that as well. He's in his later 20s and or late 20s, and he, you know, he's not getting any younger, and he keeps on getting hurt, and maybe he's just backing it down just a skosh and trying to get used to that new bike.
Yeah, like I said, it's crazy too. Like I said, being on that bike, like there's so many Hondas out there. It's just what comes to my mind when you're talking about Jordan Smith, you know, with like just Osby and all those guys. Like a lot of those Honda guys are riding pretty impressive. So
yeah, it's kind of, I noticed that too. Like normally, the last 5-10 years, it's been like KTMs. You look on the results on the broadcast, and it's like all orange. But now it's kind of splitting up, especially in the 250 class. And, yeah, definitely a lot of Hondas out there. You got the Phoenix Racing team, the Firepower team, the Factory Honda guys, and Moto Concepts. Pretty crazy, but a lot of guys there. But, yeah, but getting back to what we're talking about a little bit earlier, in our last podcast before Minneapolis, we're talking about how stacked the field is and how good racing it's going to be. And I think it's even at least exceeded my expectations of the first couple rounds of the season. Obviously, Jet Lawrence is absolutely fast on a dirt bike, and damn, the dog's not listening at all. Sorry about that, guys. But yeah, he's been really good, but in Arlington, a little sketchy there. And yeah, what do you think about that crash or the finish line?
Yeah, man, like I said, you can watch when he, like, turns it up to 11 out there, and like it's incredible to watch how ungodly fast he can be when he's like trying to frantically go through the pack. But it's like just still that young, like riding over his head and making mistakes, like that clip they showed of him swapping out the whoops just before that crossover over the finish line, and which caused that crash between him and Faulkner. Like I don't know how the hell he saved that, Nick, and it's it's like there's nothing better to watch when he's in the moment and he's like just hanging on and keeping it on two wheels. But then you just, well, for me at least, when I'm watching him, like there's no way anybody can maintain this pace without crashing, you know. Like you can just see him riding so crazy. And like, you know, the only other thing, like even in Arlington, I think we can compare it to like Anderson frantically charging through the pack, which, you know, it caused him to make that simple little mistake between coming together with Mookie. But like you can watch him and like his 110%, it seems like he can maintain that and keep that pace going as he works his way through the pack and keep it on two wheels. And same thing with like Pomac, when he's on it and you can watch him just on rails, he is so in control and smooth. But like Jet is just like a kind of like an out of control, like frantic. And you know, that's where like I that leads me to like my next statement, which is, now with Faulkner being out, I think the only person that's gonna beat Jet this season is himself. He's gonna be his own worst enemy. If he doesn't get this championship, I think it's gonna be something that he does, like crashing out and poor results, or God forbid, an injury that's gonna end his season.
Yeah, and like what you said with Tomac and Anderson and stuff, it's like, yeah, the Jet's so smooth on the bike, makes everything look so easy. And he whenever he does turn it up, and in Minneapolis he didn't have to, and we all saw how good he rode there, but whenever he does, he gets out of control his rookie year. But then again, it was his rookie year. He was 16 years old. Everyone, I think, that's 16 riding Supercross is probably going to get a little bit sketchy no matter how talented you are. But him, like, every time he rides, looks so smooth, or nearly every time, that when he does turn it up, it's like he's all over the freaking place. And yeah, like you said in the whoops, like, he almost took out Forkner in the whoops and himself. Like, he was so close to having his rear wheel hit Forkner there and somehow saved it and then got the passer on the outside. And really unfortunate to hit that clip to tough lock there. But yeah, it seems like if he just tones it back just a tad bit, he'll be fine. Like we said, it's really stacked in the East, or 250 East, that is. But still, like, even if Forkner was still in the running right now, along with McAdoo and stuff, and, like, I still think he's better than those guys, and he doesn't have to, like, necessarily be on his, like, complete A game all the time to beat those guys and get that red plate, where it's, like, he just doesn't need to really push that hard, I feel like, and maybe settle for a second or a third. And it was cool seeing him come through the pack. He had to do it twice, and he got really far up there in that first race, caught up to Hampshire there and almost got him at the end. But, the whole thing I think it's going to come down to in the 250s class is going to be consistency, and it does for all three classes. But with it being stacked in the East, I think you don't have to win every race. You have to just be there, maybe second or third. And same with McAdoo, too, because I think Jet's going to get more race wins than McAdoo. So if McAdoo can just hang in there and take the L, you know, the Jet, and maybe get a second, and, you know, just still be right there, right behind him.
Right. Yeah, I don't know how McAdoo, like I said, McAdoo looks good. I don't know. Just when I watch him, and just something about him, I just don't see that, like, that high caliber champion. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. There's something about him I don't like. I don't know. Maybe it's just me with my own opinion getting in my head, but when I look at him, I don't see it. Like, I see Jeremy Martin, but the same thing, like, I don't know, McAdoo keeps surprising me, and he does put in some good results, so.
Yeah, and I was at Daytona last year when he got the win there, and it looked pretty good, but, yeah, I don't know. I feel like he should be up there more, but he looked really good this weekend, so I guess we'll see how that goes from here going into Daytona and then Detroit.
I watched McAdoo's vlog from last weekend.
He has a vlog, like, too?
I don't know, it just seems like it must be, like, the Christian Craig thing, because, like, his girlfriend's, like, friends with the Craig family, and, like, Christian Craig's, like, wife, who thinks she's amazing. It's, like, same thing with McAdoo's girlfriend. Like, you know, of course they're gonna have a vlog and just, oh, look at how great our life is now, it's so beautiful. But I was watching Forkner's vlog, which his is, I really like, oh, I like Forkner, I like him a lot, and his vlog was pretty cool, like his all fun one was what it's called. But it's funny, in McAdoo's vlog last weekend, there was not, like, you did not even see Forkner once. Like, it didn't even seem like they were on the same team. Like, I don't even know if you even saw Forkner's bike or something. It was pretty funny. Seems like they were completely separate, which now I say it too, like, I don't even know if I, and any of Forkner's, like, he had a vlog from Minneapolis. No, actually, no, I think I did see McAdoo and Forkner's vlog, but I didn't even see Austin once in McAdoo's vlog. It was pretty funny. Like, those guys do not seem like they are friends.
Yeah, and, weren't they racing together growing up? I know McAdoo was kind of the guy further back in the pack, not up there with Forkner and Cantrell and Crown, but just being back there a little bit further. But I'm pretty sure they're racing growing up, and it seemed like everyone that raced Forkner growing up, like, hates him. Kind of funny, but and like I said before the podcast here, is I just feel bad for Forkner. I hate Forkner, but, like, and I never want him to get hurt. It's not like when, like, every year when he gets hurt, I'm happy. No, I'm not, but I don't want, you know, wish that upon anyone to get hurt, especially that much. But, like, after that last one there, and it wasn't his fault at all, you know, with Jet coming over, it's like, just come on, like he's really talented, and just to see him get hurt again is just frustrating for me, and hopefully he can bounce back, but that's just, it sucks, because he's going to get bumped up to the 450 soon, and if not, he's, what, in his mid-20s by now and had been in the 250 class since 20, what, 17, 16? I think 16 was he made his pro debut in the outdoors. I might be wrong on that, but I think 17 was his Supercross debut. So that's, what, 5 years?
Yeah.
So it's like he raced with Sexton, and Sexton's already in his second year of his 450s. I think Sexton turned actually pro after Faulkner, but anyways, yeah, it's just really unfortunate to see that happen to Faulkner.
Yeah, well, dude, and like at this point, I thought if there was like, going to be anybody to put a stop to Lawrence's momentum and get in Lawrence's head and make Lawrence have to work for this championship, it was going to be Faulkner. And now it sucks. Like, it sucks even more that Jet was like the one to cause that too. You know, it's like literally like the guy's out there like almost taking out his own competition. It's kind of sucks.
Yeah, it does. And normally when I brought this up in the podcast before, but normally when I watch a race or any sports, watch a game or anything, I'm always trying to root for someone. I don't know, it makes it more fun to watch. But with the whole battle with like Faulkner and Jet, like I don't really know who to root for. Like I said, I really don't care for Faulkner too much. But Jet, no offense to him, I like Jet. He's really talented. But oh my God, the media just blows this kid. Like they're just always talking about him. Gets so much attention, and like I'm rooting for anyone else but him, but it seems like a really good kid. But yeah, just it sucks to see that happen, and for Jet to cause it too, and I guess we'll see how he rebounds from that though, because he was super sketchy. So we're going into a non-traditional track in Daytona this weekend, so who knows how that's gonna play out. But yeah, I guess we'll
hopefully
find out.
Hopefully, plays out in Jeremy Martin's favor.
Oh yeah, he's an outdoor rider, and it was like few years ago, I think by now, was it 2018 or something, when he got bumped up to the factory Honda 450 team for Daytona. I think he did pretty good that year too. Hopefully he'll do better, and I think he's moving up to the 450 class next year. I feel like everyone's saying that though. I heard something about Faulkner moving up next year. Craig said he's going to move up no matter if he wins the title or not, because if he does win the title, he can have a chance to defend it. But he said he's moving up. He's like 30 years old right now. It's time. So he's going to move up. I heard Justin Cooper might move up. So it's like I heard that there was like four or five guys that are looking to move up, which there's no 450 spots available unless something crazy happens where a few of the guys retire because some of the guys are getting older. But yeah, it's time for some of these guys to make it happen in the 250 class, and yeah, hopefully Martin can make it happen on his second stint with the Star Racing Yamaha team after killing it in outdoors over the years and just not doing too good in Supercross.
Yeah.
And
talking about like 450 spots and stuff like that, did you hear this announcement out of Australia with the FIM World Supercross?
Yeah, I've heard something a while ago, and then I saw that article, I think on Vital today, or wherever the heck that was, where all the money that's going into it, and I think there's 10 teams allowed, and only two riders per team, per class that is, and what else? There's no privateers allowed, and it's going to be in the fall, but I think they're going to try, I think it's what, September through November for their pilot year, but I think they're aiming for, didn't they say like June or something? June through November?
Yeah.
So I think that's really going to cut in. Like it might cut into the outdoor season where teams are going to do that instead of do outdoors. I don't know how that's going to work with the, all the markets and all the manufacturers and stuff if a U.S. rider goes overseas or whatever. But I think there's going to be a lot of riders, especially like guys like Brayton. I know he's retiring here soon, but guys like him that are Supercross only, because they always talk about how hard it is to transition from Supercross to Motocross in that short time. The off season's really short, and then from Supercross to Motocross it's only 2 weeks, and if you're one of those guys that is really good in Supercross and that's your specialty, like why not do Supercross over here in the winter and spring, and then go over there to Europe, and because it looks like they're paying out pretty good over there, and be Supercross only, focus on that, and by the time the next season rolls around, you'll I think be even better than the guys that went outdoors.
Yeah, and then like I said, I think there's more money to be made too in that. But my understanding from like reading the, I kind of glanced over the article, it almost sounded like they were going to structure it more like almost like Formula One or something like that. Like you said, like where there was like the 50, what was it, 50 million or something, and they're going to divide that up and like hand it out to all the teams, so like everybody's all almost like equally funded, and all of like the payouts are more based loosely within that. It's not like sponsorship, podium bonuses, and how it is now. So it's, yeah, like everybody's going to be making like the same amount of money, and it'll be almost more organized as far as the payout and almost like the team salaries too. Like the teams, all teams will have like equal amounts of money to work from. And
yeah, I found that really cool. It's
sort of way more structured, which is like interesting, but.
Yeah, like, I saw that, and it's, you know, kind of different from what we have going on now, so it's like, I really don't like that, but it's like, actually thinking about it, I'm like, that's kind of cool, because what we have now is kind of shitty. You know, you look at the payout from the AMA, which isn't much, and these guys that don't have a factory ride and aren't getting those bonuses on the weekends, like, they aren't making that much, and I guess it depends on who you are, and hearing privateers talk about just marketing themselves, and there's money to be made, but a lot of guys are, you know, barely making it round the round, and if they can go over there and get better support, you know, why not?
Right. So, yeah, like I said, I think that will almost, if everything goes out the way that article spoke, like I said, I think that might lighten up some of the numbers you see in our outdoor series, but I mean, you know, like, who knows if that will be good or bad for the outdoor series. Like, hopefully it can still sustain itself and find sponsors and funding, and you know, and maybe if it's lighter because some more guys are doing Supercross, maybe they'll make more opportunity for some of those privateer guys to make more money racing in the summer or something. I don't know.
Yeah, and like I was thinking about it today at work when I was on my lunch break. I'm like, I really don't like this idea because I'm just used to growing up with Supercross and Motocross. We got Supercross in the spring and stuff, and heading into the freaking hot summer. Going to Red Bud on the 4th of July. Awesome atmosphere there, and along with a lot of other outdoor tracks, but it's hard for these teams to make it across the country and hit up all these outdoor rounds, and the payout isn't that great from what I'm hearing. And it, I think it's kind of obvious, even if you don't know anything about it, is where all the money is in the sport is Supercross number one, MXGP is number two, and then it drops down pretty far, I've heard, down to the outdoor series here in the U.S. So yeah, if you're getting better funding over there, it's like, heck, hit up both Supercross championships. But it's going to be really weird because it would play or fit really well into the schedule of the guys over here in the U.S., but for the MXGP guys, what's that series, like February to September? So that's going to be interfering with their championship, so they can't really do anything right there unless maybe a last couple rounds or whatever, but I think it's going to be a lot of Australian guys or those little championships that are over there, like the German championship and whatever they have going on over there. I really don't pay attention to that too much. But, yeah, the Aussie guys and the guys over here from the USA. But I'm just really curious to see how this is going to be. I think it's good for the sport, but I'm just nervous it's kind of going to take over what we have over here. And I know we don't have, like, the world championship. I guess we did. The FIM before they left last year, but status, but I feel like we have something really good going on here, so if, like, I'm all for this new championship as long as it's not really affecting what we have going on over here. But like what we said with the outdoors, like I think it's definitely going to affect it, especially if the teams are getting funding, because that's from what I hear, and you know, it's hard to get really funding just to make it from round to round and to pay the riders, and if they're getting a lot of funding over there, it's like no brainer. Well, so we have the 450 class. Anderson's looking really good, and when we're going into the Minneapolis in our last episode, we're talking about how there's so many top guys right now. But I was talking about as well as about hitting the panic button for Webb. I don't have the results in front of me, like I said a million times, but I want to get those pulled up because. He has not been doing that good. He got a race win, though, in the Triple Crown. But, man, he's not been up there. And kind of Anderson and Tomac have emerged as the favorites to win the title now.
Yeah, for sure. That's like, so he's getting a couple of spots, and I'm like, oh man, he's going to make this race hard. He's going to finish up there. And then the guys just start picking their way around, and I'm like really, really surprised that he's like, people are, guys are getting by him, and he's fading back to fourth or fifth or even further back. Like,
yeah, it's definitely surprising to me because, like, just in general, watching how much of a badass he is, and I remember a lot of the Supercross parties we went to last year, like, he was always, like, catching up to the pack, making aggressive passes, like, just proving that he's a badass, and where this year, it's like, oh, he got a good start, he's gonna run up front, and then Sexton passes him, or whoever else, you know, passes him, you're like, what the heck is going on? Like, normally he doesn't go down without a fight, and it looks like he's not fighting now, and I'm sure he's giving it his all, and trying 100%, but it's like, what's going on with him? And I've really hesitated on hitting the panic button for him because he's known to kill it, and after he won his title, he didn't get the championship that year, and he didn't look the best, but then he came back swinging for last season, and I'm just waiting for him to kick it up, and like what we said in the last episode is, well, we're going over to the East Coast now where he's probably going to do a lot better, so we'll see how that plays out, and we're two rounds into the East Coast, and he's still not looking like the normal Cooper Webb that we normally see kill it. So, yeah, I don't know what to say. I wouldn't still be surprised if he came out of nowhere, like, let's say, Detroit or Indy sometime around then. I think, what, the week after or something, I don't know. But, and gets a win, because, you know, that's who he is. But, yeah, him along with Ken Roczen, it's like, what is going on?
Yeah. Ken Roczen is just, it's sad at this point.
Yeah, it's, like, even his whole story and everything after the arm injuries, like, he was still always running up front. He didn't have that old speed like he had early on in his, like, Soaring Eagle Suzuki days or his first year on the Honda team, but he was always right there up front, but now it's like, what's going on? He's had some bad luck with tip overs and stuff, but still, like, he's pretty further back in the pack, and I think his average finish right now is, like, right around the top 10. I could be wrong on that, but as you all know, if you guys watched all the races, he's pretty far back. It seems like everyone, he won the opener, but still, it's like,
It was the second fastest qualifier last week, and then, like you said, he just rides around, like, he's got two flat tires and finishes 13th. Like, dude, at this point, like, for me, like, I feel like the guy could be on drugs or something, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like there's something, like, seriously wrong, not even just bike-related or anything. Like, Sexton, it can't be the bike, because Sexton looks so dang good, like, you know what I mean? It's like, you literally wonder if the guy's, like, bipolar, or, you know what I mean, if he's on doing drugs, or, you know, like, his wife's cheating on him or something, like, it's honestly, like, a little, like, scary and, like, room for alarm, you know?
Yeah, and, like, I'm, no joke, like, generally concerned about the guy. It's, like, we've seen what he's went through and everything, all the battles he's had to face, and it's, like, to see this happening, it's, like, sad. The dude's a good dude, and to see it, it's, like, what's wrong? Because, like, when he won Anaheim, like, when he came off the track, there was a video of him, he was like, oh my god, like, we did it. Like, he was super surprised he won a race. And then he was talking about how December was a shitty month for him with all the issues he's had. Then, but it's like, okay, what's the problem now? Obviously, he's had a lot of different battles since his arm injuries. He's faced sickness and all these crazy things, but it's like, there has to be something. I don't know. Like, normally he keeps all his fans updated, but there's so many people talking shit about him and saying how he's complaining. Maybe he has something really serious going on right now, and just, well, heck, I'm not going to say anything, you know, screw, you know, those haters, but I'm just not going to say anything and put in the work and show up and race and do the best I can, if it's first or if it's 10th, which, I don't know, I really find this hard to believe, still that he's that far back in the pack. Like, he had some bad luck earlier on in the season, but it's like, without that, he would have been up front, but now it's, I don't know what to think, honestly, about it.
Yeah, I think it's like one of those things, like, you got, like, said, like, does he have, like, CTE or something, you know what I mean? Like, where he's got, like, the concussion, like, you know what I mean? Like, something, like, literally something, like, off balance in his head, like, because it's, dude, it's like, you think, like, I don't know of any time, like, of something in the sport like this where we're kind of going to scratch your head, but, like, you know, it's like recently in football, it's like that with that one player like quitting in the middle of the game and just walking off, and like everybody's saying that, like, that guy's like mentally ill, you know?
Well, yeah, he was. I've heard he's always been a little bit of drama. Antonio Brown, that is. He was on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers before he took off his pads and everything and ran out, ran across the field when the play was going on. But I've heard he's always been a little bit of drama, like I said, but he hasn't really acted out until he got hit when the Pittsburgh Steelers, when he was playing on the Steelers, they were playing the Cincinnati Bengals, and he just absolutely got creamed by a linebacker and really rung his bell. Like, it was extremely hard hit. And ever since then, like 5 years ago or whenever that was, he's been like off. So who knows? You know, the same thing with motocross guys, like they hit their heads a lot. Like even when I rode, I was freaking slow as shit, but I fell and rang my bell quite a few times. And imagine these guys are riding all throughout the week, pushing the limits, especially on race days. And yeah, and I hope they have a good concussion protocol in place. The NFL has a way better one, but it seems like they're kind of stepping up their game. But that's really one thing that's you can't really mess around with. Like, you can, if you break your arm, you know, you can get that healed up and ready to go. But if you keep on banging your head, that's going to affect you long term.
Yeah, dude, like single back the Antonio Brown guy. He was on the cover of Madden. Like you said, he was one of the top guys, like ranked in all the NFL. For that, and then now he's like just loopy, dude. It's sad.
Yeah, like you're yeah, seeing like, him. You're like,
if we want to talk about the concussion protocol, we can kind of. I know Chase Sexton had to go through that just in order to be able to race last weekend, and then now RJ Hampshire, you can't tell me that he was.
Holy shit. I watched that, and I'm like, holy, he was spread out like he was doing snow angels or something. To the ground, like, oh,
I like when I see a guy crash like that and then their arms go like kind of limp like that, I honestly get sick to my stomach thinking that they might be like paralyzed. Like, it just makes me think of like Jesse Nelson or something, like the footage of him like sprawled out on the track, just, you know, when, what was it, Cody Williams lifted his bike off of him. Like, I honestly get like sick to my stomach when I see guys crash like that, you know. It's like, even like you said, like when we had to watch Joey knocked out what was it, last year at Daytona.
Oh my god,
it's hard, is it, for me? Like, I don't know. I have a hard time watching that stuff.
Yeah, it's like no matter who it is, it's like you can't watch it. Like some of the simple tip overs too. Like I know a guy that was a customer for Matt MCR. There, and we're talking about how he had a simple tip over, and I don't know how he fell, but like it was like really casual fall that we make, you know, when we ride, like probably every time we ride, just a normal tip over, you get up, get back on the bike, get going. Well, for him, he got paralyzed. Like, I forgot when this was, like probably 10 years ago, but it's like, even the simplest crashes, if you just land wrong, you're screwed, you know, or possibly. But yeah, with that, it's just so hard to watch. And I remember last year being at Daytona and seeing Joey get hurt. Like, I was just so pumped. He was doing really good. And I couldn't really see from where I was sitting so far out of the freaking stadium at Daytona, but whatever. But yeah, just seeing that, it's like heartbreaking. I remember after he crashed, I'm like, I want to leave. Like, I can't watch this.
Oh, dude, it's really bad to watch. So, like, going back, like I said, you gotta wonder what RJ Hampshire is having to, what hoops he might be having to jump through right now in order to.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything on him. Unless something recent came out this afternoon, but yeah, who knows what's going on with him, as we predicted, or at least talked about, how he's known to crash a lot. Like, I sent you that post from, I think, was it press day or qualifying in Minneapolis, and you're like, yeah, Corey, like, that's what we predicted, right? But yeah, for that was just a really freak accident over under, and god dang, my dog's real loud right now. But sorry about that, guys. But yeah, with him, just really unfortunate as well. Then one thing I also wanted to touch on was the Minneapolis, all the issues the riders had with carbon monoxide poisoning, or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, because
Who had that?
A lot of guys did. Sexton claimed he didn't, but he ran around like Ricky Bobby after he crashed. But there's a few riders I've heard from the media guys that were saying that had it. Was it Sexton? He said he had headaches or something, but a couple riders did. Sexton did. Oh, Adam was doing the sideline reporting or track side or whatever for NBC, and he was having headaches and stuff, I think. He was one guy that got affected by it. He wasn't even racing. A lot of guys in the press box did, I think. Was it Anderson? I think Starling did. And I don't know if Nicoletti said something like something was off in the main event the last 4 or 5 minutes in the main event, and he doesn't know if it was that or what, but he definitely felt something like really weird going on with that. But I know a few riders did, and they're saying, you know, just they're complaining about it. But I don't know, it's kind of weird. But it was freezing in Minneapolis, so. From what I was hearing is the ventilation, like, before, some race a long time ago where something was frozen, so it wasn't working right, and, you know, all the riders had the issues, so who knows if it's the same thing going on in Minneapolis, because it was really cold there, and, they raced there in the past, not like it's the new stadium where they're just now finding this out. It's like, they've raced there, and I don't think they've had any issues in the past. So yeah, who knows what's going on with that, but I guess we can talk about Tomac. He's looking really good. He got the overall win in Arlington, but he got passed by Anderson, but still, he got the job done. Not like he needed to get that last moto win over Anderson, but yeah, he's looking really good, and the saying is the season starts in Daytona, which Daytona is a couple days away right now, and heading into the final, I think 9 rounds, and he has a 6-point lead over Anderson. And then it's a big jump down to, is it Sexton in third right now, or Webb or something?
I'm not even positive. I just had it pulled up on my phone too long.
Yeah, I had everything pulled up until this app, the podcast app, took a shit, so to call you, but you had everything on there. But I know it's like a 30-point gap down the third, like somewhere around there at least, and.
It's Malcolm Stewart in third.
Oh, yeah, he's in third, yeah. He's only rider that get top fives all season long, so that's really cool to see.
You gotta, come on, like, at this point, like, if Tomac doesn't get the win at Daytona, it's because something happened. That guy looks so good on this Yamaha, like, so surprisingly good, like, if he doesn't get the win at Daytona, it's because something happened. Because Daytona is Eli Tomac's track.
Yeah, and I'm expecting him to get the win.
They should stop calling Daytona the Daytona Supercross. They should just call it the Eli Tomac Supercross. Like,
they need to take
Ricky Carmichael's name off of it. Ricky Carmichael doesn't own that track. Eli Tomac does.
Yeah, he's always looked good there in the past, and especially this year, looking so good on the bike. And like what I said before, and there's even some other guys. I got in arguments with people. Well, he won a championship in, what was it, 2020? But I'm like, no, he hasn't looked this good since, like, 2019, before that new Kawasaki. Like, he's looking really good, and just to see how comfortable he looks, and just, it seems like he's really charging, and he looks like he has everything under control. He doesn't look like he's Jet Lawrence out there, like, hauling, but he's all over the place. He's looking really good right now, and the same with Anderson. I just find it crazy that Tomac was kind of not showing that raw speed like he's has in the past, then same with Anderson. Like, Anderson won the title in 18, but that was kind of a really weird year. Like, he looked really good earlier on in the West Coast part of the championship, but after that, like, he was just Mr. Consistent, like, took a play out of Ryan Dungey's playbook and wrapped up that championship. But ever since then, he, like, last year he showed some flashes of some speed and stuff. Which is kind of funny because it was after he took off his neck brace, so all the people on the internet were going crazy about that. But anyways, he hasn't looked this good, like, I don't think at all on the 450s, including his championship year. And even if he doesn't get the title this year but continues to ride at the speed and doing what he's doing so far, I think he's going to have a better year than that year. So,
I'm just watching old videos of Eli wheeling the Wolves at Daytona because I'm so excited to watch him wheel with everybody.
Yeah, I'm excited for that, and I'm actually going down to Florida that day. So I'm hoping I can watch it on my phone or something, because it's killing me. I'm not going to be down there for it. But I'm just missing it. And then the next week is in Detroit, and I'm like an hour outside Detroit, and we're going to get back Sunday, the day after Detroit. So I really want to go to Daytona. If not, it's Detroit. Not but who knows? I might go to Indy. If you want to go down to Indy, Joey said he might go. So we all three can go down the Indy and rep Moto 247. But
It's not too late to back out of this Florida trip and just come to Daytona, or you come to Detroit.
Yeah, I don't know. The week off of work sounds really nice. Then going down to Daytona and hitting up the beaches sounds really good right now. Being this cold ass weather.
There's gonna be more girls in the Daytona, Florida.
Pardon?
I said there's gonna be more girls in bikinis at the Detroit Supercross than there is at Daytona.
Yeah. Sure. But yeah, I really want to hit both those rounds up, but I guess it is what it is. But we'll see if I can go to Indy. I kind of wanted to go to Atlanta, though. Atlanta would be really cool, the Atlanta Motor Speedway. But yeah, it's gonna be a little bit different, I think, going into this week. Well, being an outdoor style track, but I still expect Anderson to be up there and Tomac to be killing it. And who knows what Webb's going to do. It's like,
how have you been doing in your fantasy stuff?
Holy shit, I took a big L the last couple of weeks. I was like second in our group right behind you. You've been killing it. But the last 2 weeks, I went from being, like, I'm further down in our group, like outside the top 10, I think. Or I think we only have like 10 guys. But I'm like 29,000 right now. I was like in the top 2,000.
I'm 962. I was inside the 800, and I would be doing so much better if Chase Sexton hadn't fallen on the last fucking lap 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, that screwed up all my picks. Like, I would have had a really good round that round, but yeah, that screwed up my picks as well. It took me off.
I was about to get the top three correct with, like, what is it, Sexton, Anderson, and Webb. That was my top three pick. And then the guy crashes on the last lap, and I was like, dude. But then, like, I got my top four all correct last week, so that kind of bounced me back a little bit. So
yeah, it's something I gotta make better picks. I don't know. Like, it's just so unpredictable nowadays. Imagine doing it in 250 class too. It's like, oh my god, I don't know what to pick. But yeah, it's gonna be a good championship for that as well. Yeah, I thought I was doing good. I'm like, I'm in the top 2,000, and I freaking dropped down to like 29,000, whatever. But it is what it is. But and I don't normally wait until qualifying to put in my picks, so maybe I should do that. A little bit different of a game plan, you know. It's like I make my picks during the week, because I always like have these a gut feeling on who's gonna do good, and then I watch qualifying, and then it messes everything up, and I'm like, heck, I'll just make my picks early on in the week, the time stamps on there, so if I tie with anyone, you know, I'll have the upper hand. But yeah, whatever I have going on right now is not working.
Yeah, I've been doing the qualifying game, like watching qualifying and kind of checking, and sometimes even just watching. Like, sometimes you don't even really have to pay attention to the leaderboard. Like, you obviously you still do, but you, just some of the guys that you're watching, you can just tell when they're like kind of gelling with the track, you know, and they're like kind of making moves early on in qualifying. Like, you just even like in their body language, you can just tell if they're gonna have a good night or not.
Yeah, and that's one thing I need to do. I need to watch qualifying. Normally I catch up a little bit after the race, but that's not really helpful for fantasy wise.
Yeah, like you said, watch qualifying, because Ken Roczen will qualify second and then finish 13th and grab the spot in the wild card pick. So
yeah, it's like who to pick for 13th for the wild card, and it's like you wouldn't really think Ken Roczen would be down there, but he is. And there's guys like Webb that normally suck in qualifying, and then they surprise everyone and do really good in the main. But
yeah,
it's just so hard to go off of nowadays. And I'm still on that Eli Tomac train, so I don't know. Like, I always used to pick him no matter what, but now it's – or then I drifted away after the last couple of years. But now it's like, I don't know if he's a safe pick or what.
Right. Right.
I guess if you just wait till after qualifying, but yeah.
Oh, dude, you don't have to wait. 100%.
Oh, for this week.
100%. For this week, you realize Tomac.
Yeah,
wait, Daytona win.
I'm really curious to see how many people picked Tomac to win Daytona. Like, I know they throw stats like that up on the broadcast, whatever percentage of people picked so-and-so, and they have to do something for Daytona because almost everyone and their brother are going to pick Tomac to win Daytona.
This week for the Daytona first-place fantasy pick, it shouldn't even question of, like, picking the rider. They should make the first-place fantasy pick of how many seconds Eli Tomac's going to win by.
Yeah.
I'm going, like, 12-second gap by the end. That's all day. That's what I'm... Eli Tomac, 12-second gap. That's what I want my first-place fantasy pick to be for this week.
Yeah, I think at least he's going to have, like, a 6 to 9 second gap. Trying to stay serious every time. It's going to be serious saying that. But, yeah, I honestly think his starts are looking really good. Knock on wood. I just don't want to jinx him there, but... Yeah, he's looking a lot better than the last couple of years, and his starts are there. And even getting a bad start in the Triple Crown, he came up through the pack pretty quick, and he surprised me there because we all know how fast the dude is and just how really talented and how good of a rider he is. But with it being stacked, it's hard to make your way up through the pack. But what did he get in that Triple Crown race where he got like 6 or something, right? Or was it? It was right around the top 5, yeah, and he was in like dead last, so.
And that's in a shorter main, dude. That's what it was.
Yeah.
The guy's been riding so stinking good. Oh, my gosh.
Like, and...
In years past like that, he gets a start like that, and you're like, well, he's not going to move one position the rest of the main.
Yeah, like, you almost expected him to, because, like, back in 2017, he would always catch up back to, like, top 5 for sure. Maybe crack his way in the top 3. Well, a good chance that he's going to crack his way in the top 3, and then maybe 2nd is a kind of a far reach. But, yeah, like, the last couple of years, it's like... Starts 13th, finishes 9th, and now it's in that Triple Crown. Like, holy crap, he really did good. He came through pretty fast.
I could see him at Daytona having like a James Stewart Toronto, like 14th place to first.
That would be so awesome to see.
I honestly could like feel like the way he's been riding and how much fun and how good he looks. I could totally see something like that happening. Like, you know, crappy start to first place. Like, that's how good I feel about him and Daytona and everything right now.
Yeah, it seems like he's really gelling with that bike and looking good, and it's going to be cool to see him on more of an outdoor-style track. And
yeah.
And I think that'll be so cool just to see him do that and it kind of make a statement, being like, I'm back, mother truckers, I'm back. I'm not messing around here.
I feel like Anderson was trying to make the statement last weekend, you know, like kind of aggressively fighting his way, like clawing his way into the first place finishes and stuff that he had in the Triple Crown. He's still only good enough for 2nd overall, but still same thing, like statement, like passing Tomac and all that stuff too, like just showing how hungry and how bad he wants it. Like I said, I would be cool for Tomac to turn around and make a similar statement this weekend.
Yeah, and that's going to be really cool to see, and yeah, like, he didn't need to get that win in the Triple Crown, but yeah, Anderson got the pass on him, and Tomac didn't need to get the win, that is, but yeah, I think both of them really have a lot of promise, and they should both be really happy with how their riding is, and even Anderson, like, he's made a lot of mistakes this year, and he's only 6 points back, and he has a huge gap over third, so I think he should be having a huge smile on his face right now going into the last 9 rounds.
Right.
Yeah, but...
It's getting pretty exciting at this point. It's pretty cool, too, now that the points gap's this close, then coming to Detroit here in a couple weeks. I know you won't be there, but, like, for me, at least, as a going to spectate in person and stuff like that, it should just make it all the more exciting to have the Supercross coming to town.
Yeah, super excited for to have it still be in Detroit. The pits there suck, so I think that's a big turnoff to a lot of fans. So hopefully Detroit gets a really good turnout this year. I know they're struggling for a while with that, and like I feel like the pits and everything has to, you know, be a factor in that. But because Indy has like a really good setup going out in the parking lot out there, but Detroit, they're in like the storage rooms. you see PC in like this little area in this cluttered storage room. It's like, what the heck? But yeah, I definitely have to hit up another Supercross round. You know, like I haven't been to a Supercross since Daytona, and that sucked last year with all the COVID rules. So yeah, it'd be cool to go to another one like Indy or whatever. But yeah, I'm super excited for the East Coast, the rest of the championship, and even watching the 250 West too. It should be really good, and it's kind of I don't know, really interesting to see or to hear everyone's take on just the 250s in general, because like what I think we brought this up in the last episode, that there's a lot of people in their mid-20s like Justin Cooper, RJ Hampshire, that are in the 250 class, and obviously there's guys like Craig that everyone talks about. He's 30 years old, and over in the GPs, I think, what's the age limit, like 23 or 24? Like, I could have swore it was like that, like, last time I checked on that, it was like 5 years ago, so who knows? I think it's still right around there, but, like, I don't know what the system should be right now, because there's no 450 rides really at all, and as you can see, like, Chisholm's making it in the main event, but, like, there's only a couple privateer guys, and shout out to Chisholm for killing it, and Logan Carnow made the main event, shout out to him, and Arlington there, but it's like almost the whole main event's factory guys. There's guys that have won 250 titles that are struggling to get rides, and there's a lot of hate like for Christian Craig. It's like he could have probably moved up, well, obviously by now, but it's like, is he gonna get a good contract with Star Racing, do the 250s in the Supercross, 450s outdoor, or struggle to find a ride like Rocky Mountain? Maybe like them or some other satellite team, where you're not making that much, you know, and you're making less, and then you would be in the 250 class.
Yeah. Like, speaking of 450s and stuff like that, like you kind of reminded me too, not to change the subject too much, but did you see that Garrett Marchbanks is racing 450s?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I forgot. I was going to bring it up. We were talking about Daytona, but I forgot. Yeah, he's going to be racing 450s, and I'm really excited to see that because he's a big guy. What's he, like 6'1", 190 or something?
I think he's like 6'9".
Yeah, 6'9", 169. He's pretty big for a moto guy, and to see him on the 450, it should be really cool. Looking at the videos over the last week or so over at Club MX, he's looking good on the bike, so I'm really curious to see how he is.
Not only that, but he's also a Daytona 250 class winner.
Yeah, like he... I don't know if he likes that track, but he won it a couple years ago and probably has to feel pretty good going into Daytona. And like we said earlier, the team's killing it. Alex Martin's doing a little bit better now in that 450. And Alex, I think, has been inside the top 15 there, hovering around top 15. So I'm curious to see where Garrett lands, but I think he's going to ride good no matter how it plays out.
I looked up the weather earlier today, too, for Daytona. It looks amazing, too. There's not, like, an ounce of rain in the forecast as of right now for this weekend, so
sweet.
That's pretty cool, too.
Yeah, last year it was raining for the majority of practice and stuff, but, yeah, that'd be cool if it's sunny, and we see some good racing for Daytona, and hopefully he puts in a good ride. I'm definitely rooting for him.
Yeah, do you think he'll be able to finish in front of Alex?
I've heard this. I've been thinking about this for a while because I've heard people in another podcast and stuff talk about it too. And I want to say yeah, but I don't know. Alex is riding good the last couple rounds, except
yeah,
that
Alex
wild.
He's been in there in the grind, and Alex is a better outdoor rider. So this, like, Alex to me is a phenomenal outdoor rider. So
yeah,
his track should suit him.
Yeah, I think he should do better than what he's been doing there, or so far that is, but.
And he's been training in Florida too.
True. Yeah. Yeah.
He's been like, he spent like a lot of this off season and stuff in Florida. So hopefully all that, because I really like Alex and I just want to see him do amazing. Like, you know, like a top 10 finish for him, I would probably be jumping up and down for him.
Yeah, he needs to get up there, and yeah, I'm definitely rooting for both those guys on the Club MX team. And yeah, Alex is looking better. He looks freaking tiny in that bike, but he's getting the job done. Got a little sketchy at Minneapolis, going off the track, going over the tabletop, and almost taking out Kay Clayson there. Did you see that video? Did I send that one in the chat?
Dude, I had a chat with Joey about that, because that's similar. how, you know, when Joey had crossed over into another lane practicing Supercross and caused his really bad crash and collision. And Joey was kind of, like, watching that, shaking his head and, like, almost having flashbacks after seeing that video. That was pretty scary. He got extremely lucky.
Yeah, both dealing with whoops. Joey getting sketchy at the Club MX track. Launching off the lane, going into the start, and then Alex going over the tabletop, and he's fine. He rode it out. Nothing happened. But, man, if Cade was, like, a second or two, like, further there, you know, going up the table, like, that could have been a gnarly collision, him taking off on the face of the table and Alex, you know, going over, like, I watched that, and it was even, like, after the fact. Like, I knew that he was fine, but he's still, like, tensed up a little bit, like, oh, my God, like, that could have been gnarly.
Yeah. That'd be crazy. Yeah, so like I said, Alex Martin and Jeremy Martin, like, I mean, I'm just gonna throw it out there right now because we're kind of talking about it. Like, my 250 picks, I think it's gonna be Jeremy Martin first, and then Jet Lawrence second, and then Cameron McAdoo third, I think, for this weekend. Just Jeremy Martin, like, you know, starting on my seems pretty healthy, should be 100% now, like, ready to go watch him clean up on the track. That should suit his amazing outdoor skills.
Yeah, I think he should definitely do better than what he has been, and yeah, I guess we'll see how it plays out this weekend. But he's getting towards the end of his 250 career. He has a good bike and he has all the tools to make it happen, and yeah, I'm definitely rooting for him, and I don't know what to make for my picks, but yeah, I don't know, heck, I'll go with the 250 ones right now. I don't know, I think Lawrence is going to get the job done. Lawrence, Martin, and then McAdoo, rounding out the top three there. But honestly, I want Martin to win, though.
Yeah, dude. That's what, he's got Jeannie Carmichael, man. She'll probably be in attendance at that one, ready to crack the lip if he doesn't deliver, man. She's brutal.
Yeah, and who knows with Daytona, like, Brayton won it. Like, no offense to him, he's a great Supercross rider, but I think he caught people off guard there for sure when he won it a couple years ago. So, yeah, who knows if there's a wild card to play a factor in there.
Yeah, that's the thing, too. Like, I feel like, too, if they're in the track for some crazy stuff to happen and for somebody that wouldn't usually have a good performance, like you said, it's happened, man. There's almost, like, magic in the air or something in the air at Daytona, like, for Brayton to get the win or somebody like Jake Marzak way back in the day to finish on the podium, you know, like, if there's a track for something wild and crazy to happen, stuff to grab and shake things up, Daytona is the track that it'll happen at.
And what's pretty cool about Daytona was it 2009, I think, Josh Lichtel making his comeback after he had a factory ride on Star Racing Yamaha, had some gnarly ankle injuries. And he got hurt, got a normal job. What was he doing, like painting or something like that? Just had a normal 9-to-5 job. And then he got back into it. It was pretty cool. I was definitely rooting for him. And with him riding for MCR, like, my dad working at MCR, for you guys that don't know, he worked there. So, like, I was constantly at MCR. Josh didn't ride there too much, but just to be around him and everything. And it was really cool to see when he made his comeback, and he was running up front and leading Daytona for a while in front of, like, Nico Izzy there on that factory Makita Suzuki there. And like, that guy has more talent than most guys, even pros now. Like, Josh Lichtel was just on another level, like one of those guys that have had all the talent in the world and just, you know, just couldn't make it happen. But, like, he was always beating Millsaps and stuff growing up. Yeah, but who knows? It could be a wild card. I think that'd be pretty cool if you know, an underdog kind of comes up and you know, beats some of the top guys.
Yeah. That'd be cool. So there's a couple guys back there. You know, like, we didn't really talk about, but Marshall Long, a couple good finishes at the Triple Crown, too. He was pretty, like, just scratching at the, just outside of the top 10 in two out of the three mains last weekend. It was really good for him. Like, strong rider, if he gets a good start, he can hold his own.
Yeah.
So, and maybe too, like, I don't think he's as much of an outdoor, or I mean, as much of a Supercross specialist, so maybe the outdoor style at Daytona will suit him better, too.
Yeah, and we all know his fitness is there, so if Daytona gets really gnarly and rough, which he normally does, Marshall's gonna, you know, be there at the end and still going strong. Yeah, he's been pretty good so far. Had that takeout in Minneapolis, but yeah, he's been good. But you gonna make your four key picks before going into our last segment of the day?
Yeah. I think we already know who my first place pick is, and then I think it's gonna come down between Anderson and Sexton. And if I really had to pick the two of them for second and third, I think at this point I'd probably go Anderson and then Sexton and third, and then even Sexton, I would almost put an asterisk next to him because the way the Daytona track's loose and sandy like that, and the way Sexton's been riding, I could totally see him making a mistake and tipping over, and you know, I think he'll be up there, you know, he's easily a top three guy for this weekend if he doesn't have that, if he doesn't have one of his famous mistakes in there. So
yeah, like every weekend, I don't know who to pick. Obviously, I pick a Tomac Girl from the win. I think Anderson's going to do really good. And Sexton, I kind of have the same picks as you, but I kind of want to change it up a little bit. But still, in those picks, I wasn't that confident where it's like, especially Daytona, it's like, I don't even know who to pick anymore. But Eli Tomac, you really can't go with him getting the dub. Just in general right now, but let alone Daytona. Sorry, what were you saying?
With that 6 or 9 second lead.
Oh, yeah, at least 6 or 9 seconds, guys. He's going to be really good and have a solid gap right there. Yeah, with him, I think he's going to win. I want to do Anderson and Sexton, but switch it up a little bit. I want to flip-flop him as well, but screw it. I will flip-flop him. I'll put Sexton in second.
Well, before we kind of go away from it, like some of the guys that could potentially do really well there, I mean, like Bam Bam, I think would, you know, maybe do really well there. He's shown some really, really good outdoor skills in the past.
Yes.
And maybe even like Mookie's building up some good momentum too. You know, so those could be other guys. And shoot, I mean, even Marvin's had some decent luck at Daytona in the past. You know, there's so many guys that, you know, that loose, sandy track, you know, it suits their intensity and their some of their either brute force styles or like somebody like loose spin, but they're like just that smooth style where they can like almost like, you know, with that beautiful art racecraft, like dance around the track and carry the momentum, almost look like they're on top of that sand and not riding through it.
Yeah, you're kind of reading my mind there. Like I was thinking about switching out Sexton or Anderson, probably Sexton, switching out him for Mookie or Bam Bam. Yeah, like we said earlier, like Mookie's been looking really good. He's been hauling. But I wasn't too sure about, you know, picking him for the podium in Daytona. But honestly, I'd like to see him get up there in the podium. Then
yeah.
We all know Barsha, he's Bam Bam, so anything can happen in his style. He can easily be up there with guys battling there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like no
Barsha,
matter how...
Barsha was on the podium last weekend, wasn't he?
I'm not sure if he got the overall on the podium, but he was up there. He was leading for a little bit, and Webb got him, you know, in the first main, I think that was. But yeah, he was up there. Up there and good.
Right.
But it's time to go into our final segment of the night, and I guess we don't really, our podcast, I need to work on it being more structured, but it's kind of all over the place. But we have one segment that's set in stone. Like obviously we make our picks every week and talk about the last couple rounds, but we got our segment going on right now. Oh, come on, the volume's not loud. Yeah, the volume's up a little.
Alright, you playing it or?
And there we go, Moto Chicks. I don't know, we don't have a freaking name for this segment. And we're back. Yeah, we still don't really have an official name for this segment. We kind of bounce some ideas around. We haven't really, at least I haven't put too much thought into it. I don't think you have either. Because, the Moto Club podcast here, but, I think we touched on this in an episode last week, but when after Minneapolis, I think it was, they were talking about, who was it that said, I found it funny, I sent it into the group chat, it was something about Riley buying Jet merch, and she commented on Jet's post and said, I'm whatever size, and Austin said whatever size, asking for her, saying, yeah, we'll take the merch. But yeah, I wonder what's going on now. You know, I think they were engaged a couple years ago. And then I heard they broke it off. I have no idea. Then they're back together now, or I don't even know if they were ever apart. But with another injury, you know, maybe she can move on from Faulkner. You know, the old beat up guy that keeps on getting hurt and breaking down. For I don't know. Maybe like Maddie, like she moved on from Sexton to. We talk about it a lot, but Sexton, his former teammate Cameron McIndoe, and maybe who's the next team that she can move on to from Faulkner? Shimoda? Shimoda getting a girlfriend?
I think Shimoda might have a girlfriend just from a couple of like a dirt track video I saw. He's just a pretty quiet, respectful kid that's not gonna be one his girl up, you know.
Then maybe Riley is a good fit.
I don't know, just from like Austin Faulkner's podcast, like I actually, not podcast, from his blog, with him and his girlfriend on there, like, I mean, I actually gained a little bit more respect for him, and I gained a lot of respect for her. Like, she actually seemed like,
she's cool.
From a little bit of the behind the scenes stuff, she seems like way cooler than like any of the other chicks, like you said, like Craig and wife, or you know what I mean, like Craig's early, McAdoo girlfriend too, like they just seem so basic, just basic as can be, and like Riley, Austin's girlfriend, she actually seems pretty cool. Like some of the music they're listening to into the car, and just some of like the clothes she's wearing, like just showing off her style and some of the bands she's into, showing her making her like basic avocado toast, and then she pulls out two different types of hot sauce and like puts it on her avocado toast. And I was like, oh okay, like so you know what I mean, like not you know what I mean, just kind of being that like all natural girl, like not afraid to get like dirty or you know what I mean, like just show some flavor, not just trying to be some like freaking perfect Barbie or something.
And put some Frank on that bitch. Put that shit on everything.
She did the spicy sriracha and Tabasco sauce, like combined them on. Like I'm like, man, that's kind of gnarly. Like she's badass. Like
damn, she's not messing around, you know.
Dude, I'm like, shit, like, she's actually kind of badass. I don't know what she's doing now, but yeah, man, you gotta give it to her. Like, I'm watching those videos, and I mean, I think she has makeup on. But God, she is very attractive.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I probably need to tell her to say that one, but oh my god.
Well, yeah, her and Matthew's girlfriend, Sexton's girlfriend.
Yeah,
a lot of them. And we're talking about Roxanne with his issues and wondering if his wife's cheating on him. Like, I thought he had a good home life. They seem like a really strong team together. Who knows? Yeah. Like, I don't think so at all, but who knows? You know, something could be happening there. I don't have no idea what's happening with him, stuff like that, but he doesn't seem like he'd be having any girl issues or whatever, because I know that's honestly, that's a big factor in the sport, too, like, hearing people getting hurt because they're trying to show off for some chick that's at the track, you know, it's crazy, because you don't really hear that in the media that much, and you hear, like, from some guys inside the industry, yeah, so-and-so, yeah, he's getting hurt, because you're like, what the fuck, like, it's, I don't know, it's kind of funny, but, yeah, they definitely play a role in segments just for fun and everything, and I don't think we normally have that much for the segment every week, but I don't know, it's something like that is, you know, seriously a factor, because if you have you know, not a strong woman by your side, you can be, you know, really rooming
through. Dude, my second time was that really old country song where it's like, stay in my
Yeah, like, who knows if those guys with the really hot girls, if they're like a distraction, you know, maybe they just have so much confidence that it doesn't freaking matter, but we've seen it, you know, coming into effect a couple times, but, yeah.
Nothing going on. So there's like a dynamic about it, you know what I mean? Like, shoot, like, I don't know, like, you said you got, like, Dean Wilson and, like, his girlfriend always, like, making his vlogs with him and has a track with him, or, like, Alex Martin, like, I think his wife almost seems like she's got, like, a full-time job, like, I don't know, I want to say, like, a nurse or something, and she's, like, hardly at the races, and she's always kind of grinding, doing her own thing, and, like, you know, like...
Yeah, she's low-key a badass, like, I've hardly seen her, I'm, like, he talked about his wife a little bit, I'm, like, I don't know what she looks like, I saw her a couple times in the vlogs, when he got hurt, and it was the early race last year. But it's, and then hearing him in an interview, yeah, my wife, I'm in Florida, not at Club MX training because my wife has a job back home in Florida. And she's, like, there's a lot of girls within the industry that, like Maddie, like, she's a big icon, though, making her, with just her, not, you know, not from McAdoo's success or anything, but always posting stuff, always, like, in front of your face on social media where you don't see that with Alex's wife, but her girlfriend, whatever she is, but, yeah, they see, like, they got it going on and a strong relationship there, but, yeah, the segment, I don't know, actually, but, yeah, it's something, like I said, it's kind of all of it, it's a joke, but it's something to take into consideration, like, and going back to when I was in high school, there was a guy that was a former professional football player, and he was talking about how he had this extremely hot chick when he was, it might have, was it in high school or college, I think it was before he went into the NFL, and, he knew she was hot, like, he was like, it's kind of funny, this cracks me up every time, but I tell the story, but he's always like, yeah, she wasn't breeding material, man, like, you got to get breeding material, like, he was scouting out, like, all these girls, like, just to, like, I gotta produce this powerhouse son to play sports and everything, and having just not some, like, really attractive girl that just, you know, doesn't mesh well with you, and you can really, you know, play a role in it, and, just saying how to play a huge role in your career.
Said it's a pretty cool change for me from like other girls I've dated, like somebody that I can actually go and do something with, and she can keep up with me and not leave me in the dust. Which for me, it's amazing for the stuff we're into. It's, she's not afraid to get down in there and hang it out and send do some gnarly stuff with me. So,
yeah, shout out to Emma there. She's killing it too.
Yeah, she made.
Like, I wouldn't want to go running with her, you know, like, I used to run a lot. And stuff, and yeah, I don't want to go running with her. Like, she would kick my ass.
She did a 6 mile run today. She did 7 miles yesterday. We did 5 on Sunday. She's gnarly.
Yeah, no. Yeah, like, for these guys, too, if they have someone, like, their wife goes on the ride, hops on their e-bike when they're on their cycling rides or something. Always be doing something together, but yeah, I think that's all I have in this segment. I really don't have any more info from the first week doing it this year, but yeah, I guess there's nothing juicy like in the motocross industry. Like, you gotta pry harder for some juicy news on this stuff, and I just don't feel like prying harder than I already am, so. Dude, I guess that's where that's at. Yeah, I think that's everything I wanted to touch on in this podcast, I think. Kind of a lot to cover with the break from last week and having 2 rounds that we had to cover today. But anything else you wanted to touch on?
Did you see Jeffrey Hurley broke his foot in Spain? Or I think he was practicing in Spain, but he broke his foot.
Yeah, wasn't that like a few weeks ago? Or?
Yeah, I just missed it, and then I kind of heard about the results from this following week where Geyser won. I think he did a 1-2 for the first overall, but Prado had a pretty impressive second one, it sounded like.
Yeah, I didn't hear too much about it. I heard a little bit of a recap, but yeah, I think he's out for a good amount of time. Like, I forgot, like, I heard it was like maybe in May or something. Like, I could be completely wrong, you guys, on that. But I think he's out for the good majority of the round, so he's not going to be, not the majority, but a few rounds. So he's not going to be in the championship hunt unless something, like, ridiculous happens with Geyser or Prado. But, yeah, I heard Prado did good. Geyser getting a dub there. And then there's that German kid that I don't even know this kid's name, but apparently, like, he was a guy that was outside of the top 5. But, you know, you could tell that he had talent and he could potentially be something one day. But I think even, like, from what I'm hearing, the guys that are all geeked on the MXGPs, like, they weren't really expecting him to win, and he might went from not having a top five finishing or finishes to getting a win there. So that's pretty cool.
Right. Quickly touching on Jeffrey, it's like kind of the same thing as like Jet was, and you're comparing like lightning fast but out of control at the same time. It's, I feel like Jeffrey Herling's career might be similar to like that. That's what Jet Lawrence's career might be like too. Like when he's healthy and on, dude, he's falling, but like just as a matter of him keeping it on two wheels and keeping that under control.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. And like going back to his MX2 days, it's like, this dude's just insane. Like, I remember playing the MXGP, the first video game they had, and it's like, he was the man back then, back in 2013, and he's still the man now, but it's like, he just has these bad get-offs, and he just can't keep it on two wheels. And especially, like, the tracks over there are complete shit. They're sketchy as crap, and everything, too, so, you know, it's just more of a risk for sure, but, yeah, hopefully Jet's career isn't like that, And like I said before, like I like Jet, but he just gets so much attention. So I really don't want to root for the guy, but I definitely, with all the talent he has, like, I definitely want to see him have a good career and a solid career, that is. And hopefully it doesn't turn out like that. Like, Curling's obviously won the title last year, looked really good. Has a lot of championships to his name overall with the MX2 and then getting the MXGP there. But I feel like Jet can really have something. He just needs to, not maybe ride over his head. I don't know if he's just riding over his head too much or what, but just stupid mistakes, like, you can eliminate those and be like Ryan Dungey and settle for a second and show up the next race and, like, when he's feeling on it or feeling really good and when he's on it and getting a win there. But I guess we'll see how it plays out this year, but he should get the title. Like, I know he's one of the youngest guys out there and stuff out of that contenders that is, but yeah, it's like his title lose now almost, and it's only round three right now. But anyways,
I didn't see that Brian Kasu had any of the last rounds, so I was like kinda looking for him. It looks like he just had a
What happened here?
He got like a pretty bad bruise on his thigh, so he's been like sending out a couple rounds, so
I really forgot. Yeah.
He will decide the lineup this weekend.
Yeah, I saw him when you said, it was you, right, that said something to our group chat about him, and I really don't know too much about him, but watching Geneva a couple years ago with Joey and him and the panel a little bit, he seems like a really cool guy, and I'm really pumped to see him over here in the States, chasing his dream, and hopefully he gets back. I didn't even know he was gone, but, I was excited to see him race in Minneapolis. I kind of forgot about him.
Yeah, I know, like I said, it's so stacked that you kind of forgot them. A couple guys weren't there, so.
Daytona should be a really good one. I think the last nine rounds are going to be really good no matter who wins. There's just so many guys that are looking good and that can potentially win in both classes. The West is kind of Christian Craig's right now, but especially the East and just the working class, there's going to be some really good racing, a lot of battles I see, and I guess we'll see how this plays out in this outdoor style track in Daytona. And well, going back to the traditional Supercross layouts in Detroit and see if things are going to stay the same with Tomac Anderson's one and Webby and off. So I guess we'll see how it plays out. And thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. And can't wait for our next one here. Should be good. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Moto247 Show. I'd really appreciate it if you guys would go give us a follow on our Instagram pages. We are on there at moto.247 is our main page. Then our podcast page is on there at the Moto247 Show. Anyways, thank you guys so much for listening again, and peace out!